He started his NFL career being named to the All-Rookie team. He finished his career in the Saints Hall of Fame. The guy is black and gold through and through. He is Stan Brock.
What's up, guys? This is Mike Carney.
This is Toy Cook.
I'm Randy Mueller.
This is Quinn Early.
I'm Bill Monroe.
I'm Alex Molden.
I'm Jake Cuff. And this is Life of a Saint.
And this is Life of a Saint.
And this is Life of a Saint.
The Life of a Saint.
Life of a Saint.
Life of a Saint.
And this is Life of a Saint. Who dat?
Stan, how you doing? Let's get started way back in the beginning. When did you first start taking football seriously?
Probably my sophomore year in college. Really, in high school, I liked basketball more than football. But then once I got into college and started playing football, I had some great coaches, Bill Mallory and George Ballou. George Ballou was my position coach, and Bill Mallory was my head coach. And I had great coaches, and they really were the guys that inspired me to want to go on.
So I know you grew up in Portland, but you chose the University of Colorado to go to school. What prompted that choice?
Well, the easy answer is that both of my brothers were there. Pete is 4 years older than I am, and Willie is 3 years older than I am. And they were both at Colorado. But if you've ever been to Boulder and seen that campus and walked around there, and if you enjoy the outdoor life, really, I couldn't think of a better place to go. I was very highly recruited. I was recruited by Oklahoma and Nebraska, UCLA and Washington, and those were the trips that I went on, and quite honestly, there's no comparison to Boulder, Colorado.
I'm sure you faced your share of obstacles along the way, but what was the toughest obstacle you had to overcome in making it to the NFL?
I guess I was my biggest obstacle, because I don't know that I ever really believed, all the hype. In high school, there were better kids on my team. There were better football players on my team. But because my older brother, who's 4 years older, so by the time I'm a senior in high school, he's a senior in college, right? So he's a college All-American and very good football player. My other brother, Willie, was a small college All-American, and then he went to Colorado. And so I got a lot of press and accolades because of my older brothers. And I really believe that, I was the only All-American football player out of the state of Oregon. And I knew there were better players on my team. So those kind of things, they have never really meant anything to me, because, when outside people are voting on it, I really didn't put any stock into it. And so being highly recruited was, it was whatever. And I knew that it was because my brothers, everyone was kind of betting on the come that I would, be able to play. So getting into college and playing football at University of Colorado, and then your question was, what was my biggest obstacle? Well, my biggest obstacle was always me. I was never sure that I was, really that good. Other people tell you, but probably then by the time I, got to be a junior and my senior year, then when my teammates voted me as a captain, that meant a lot. And then I was voted by my teammates as the offensive player of the year from Colorado my senior year. Those are the ones that I believe. I believe when my teammates vote, those are the ones that I believe. So my biggest obstacle was me. I wasn't really sure that, and then now I'm going to be the 12th player picked in the first round of the draft of 1980, and I'm, go to New Orleans, and I'm really, are you really sure that I'm worthy of that? I'm not sure that I believed I was. And and I was hoping that it wasn't the height. But then once I got to New Orleans and Dick Stanfill was my offensive line coach, I absolutely loved that guy. He was great for me. He was great to me. He helped me a lot. And my confidence just kept soaring. And so, yeah, I think the biggest obstacle, kind of a long-winded answer to your simple question.
Did you attend the draft, or was that kind of before that was a thing?
Yeah, there was no draft back then. There was no attending a draft in 1980. Hell, I was in my apartment with a rotary dial phone, and they weren't allowed to call you until 8 o'clock in the morning. And at 8 o'clock in the morning, my phone rang, and it was actually the Buffalo Bills. What they used to do is they used to call and see if you would be interested in playing for their team. And then they would hold you on the line so that, and there was no call waiting back then, but they would just hold you on the line so no other teams could call you. And so then the Buffalo Bills traded their first round pick, which I forget the number, but it was higher than 12. They traded that pick to Seattle. And when I put the phone down, and if you remember, I don't know how old you are, but you put the phone down and you would hit the two buttons to hang it up. And as soon as those buttons made contact, the phone rang again. It was the New Orleans Saints. And they said, you know, we're going to draft you in the first round. And they came back and said, yeah, we just drafted you. And there was no ESPN. There was no cable TV. And so I'm like, okay, thank you very much. And they said, yeah, someone will be in contact with you. And we'll go from there. And I'm like, okay, thank you very much, and hung up, and that was it. I went to my wife and said, hey, we just got drafted by the New Orleans Saints.
So you're a first-round draft pick. You end up heading to New Orleans. Who was it that took you under their wing and kind of showed you what it was like to be an NFL player?
Yeah, it would be Archie Manning. So Archie, the New Orleans Saints made me a starter from day one at training camp. In the old days in training camp, we got into training camp and the rookies were there for 2 weeks. And then the veterans come in. And then when the veterans came in, the first day the veterans came in, they made me a starter. So, and I didn't earn it. That wasn't the earned spot. So now you can imagine I have, you know, these veteran offensive linemen who just lost one of their friends who was a starter the year before, and they replaced him with a rookie and who hasn't earned anything. It was the first day of practice. So they weren't very helpful at the beginning. But Archie knows, okay, if the guy's a starter, then I better make sure he feels good about it. So Archie took me under his wing, and he helped me with a lot of things. Yeah.
223 starts in 234 games, incredible display of durability. What do you attribute that to?
Pure luck, really pure luck. You know, I wanted to play a long time, but a lot of people want to play a long time. And mine was just, it's just pure luck that, you know, you don't get hurt. You don't have a reason that you can't play. And really in my 16 years, I only missed 11 games in my whole career. I missed 9 one season because I blew my knee out, and I missed 2 another season because I blew my knee out. Other than that, I played in every game. So it's just luck, you know, really luck. I was very lucky, very fortunate not to get injured, and that's what really kind of kicks everybody out.
You certainly had your share of bumpy years earlier on in your days in New Orleans, but in 1987, you guys finally have a winning season. What was that like for you to finally get over that hump?
Yeah, there's a lot of history between 1980 and 1987, and it's hard to blow by that. But, you know, in 1980, we were 0-14, and we won our 15th game in New York against the Jets. That's when Buddy Deliberto was, announcing the Saints news with a bag on his head. There was a lot of things. We lost Dick Nolan, our head coach. He got fired with 4 or 5 games to go. Then the whole staff changed over. Bum Phillips came in, and Bum brought in a different philosophy, and he believed in family, and he believed in putting a group of guys together that were committed to each other. We might not have been the best athletes, but he wanted a group of guys that he knew would go to war for him every time, you know. So he got us kind of on that start, and you can't give anybody more, no one can have more credit than Bum Phillips for that, his first draft. If you go look at his first draft in 1981, you know, it was George Rogers and Ricky Jackson and Jim Wilkes, Frank Warren, Hokie Gaijon, Hobie Brenner. It's the guys that really were the core of the New Orleans Saints to get to the 1987. So I don't think it's fair to blow through 1980 through 1987 without mentioning, you know, those kind of things. And then, you know, then we lost Bum. Bum got fired, and they brought in Jim Mora, and Coach Mora brought in a completely different philosophy. He was a no-nonsense, go-to-work guy. It fit my style, so it didn't ever really bother me, his style. But we started putting more talent. He brought, you know, into that defense that we had, he brought, you know, Sam Mills and Vaughn Johnson and Pat Swilling. He built up a defense that was probably the best defense in the National Football League. Not probably, it was definitely the best defense in the National Football League. And then offensively, all we had to do was basically don't turn the ball over and score some points. And we knew we had an opportunity to win. And we had Martin Anderson, who was our kicker. So from an offensive standpoint, basically by the time we crossed the 45, we knew we had 3 points. And so we just had to, you know, maintain. So then we started winning, you know, and it made it great. The problem was, and Coach Mora would tell you this, that, you know, we worked so hard during the season that by the time we got to the postseason, most of us were completely just worn out. You're just beat up and tired. And so we got to the postseason, and we never won a postseason game while I was there. So. Right. But there are a lot of great things that, you know, while I was in New Orleans, we had a lot of fun. Can you imagine right now we were 13-3 and we were the wild card team because the 49ers were 14-2. So, and it was a different era. There was no free agency. They had a plan B type of thing, but it wasn't like it is now. Basically, when you were drafted by the Saints, you could have just tattooed it on your butt and that fleur-de-lis on your butt, and you knew that's where you were going to be, and that's where you were playing.
If I asked you to pick your favorite moment in New Orleans, is there something that comes to mind?
Yeah, the first one would be that first win in 1980. When we were in New York, it was the 14th week. There was snow blowing around in there. We weren't supposed to win, but that win, you would have thought we won the Super Bowl. Honestly, we were on that airplane playing lots of music. Everybody was happy. It was a great feeling. Probably, you know, as good as any. And then the other one would be when we won the NFC West for the first time, and we were in Arizona and we beat the Cardinals. And whatever else happened around the NFC West on that weekend allowed us to sew that up, and we were AFC West champions.
So after 13 seasons, you leave New Orleans. What was that like for you?
Yeah, that was heartbreaking. You know, that was heartbreaking. I wanted to play my whole career in New Orleans. I love Louisiana. I love the people there. I love the lifestyle, and so. That was heartbreaking. That was just one of those decisions that gets made in football, and you just deal with it. And so I made a couple of phone calls and called around. And one of my old offensive line coaches was in San Diego, and Bobby Ross was there in San Diego, and I was able to uh, go down there and try out. And then, you know, I was fortunate enough that they let me be on their team.
So you get out of New Orleans, you go to San Diego, you finally make it to your first Super Bowl, and staring at you on the other side of the field is an old foe in the San Francisco 49ers. Did anybody look to you for any advice as far as how to deal with all the offensive and defensive firepower that they had on that squad?
No, this was, we were the youngest team in the National Football League. So, and I was in my 15th year when we went to the Super Bowl. So the next oldest guy on the team, I think it was Junior Seau, and he probably had, you know, 7 years or something like that. But so we were a very, very young football team, and except for me. And I'll tell you, more ironic than that was across from me was going to be Ricky Jackson. That's who I was going to play in the Super Bowl. So that was I was prepared for that. So I knew how good Ricky was at the time, and I did not want to be embarrassed in the Super Bowl. So I was very aware of what was going on there. A playoff game. So, you know, there were people that could give us more advice than that. But, we knew the 49ers were loaded on offense. And then from our offensive standpoint, we felt like, you know, we didn't turn the ball over. We could score some points on their defense. Their defense was good, but their offense is what really, San Francisco's offense, what really made them great.
Now, you've certainly done your share of both playing on the field and coaching. Is there one that's more enjoyable than the other?
There's nothing better than playing. There's nothing. I mean, as a coach, it's great to put a plan together and go out there and execute it and all those kind of things. But there's no substitute for being on the field and putting your hand in the dirt and being part of 11 guys that either fight all the way through it and you come out on the short end of the stick, or you fight through it and you come out victorious. There's no substitute for that whatsoever. Coaching is great. I love coaching. My last real job, I was the head coach at the United States Military Academy at West Point, and to all the things that it takes for those young men to come to West Point, you know, for the recruiting and picking them out of, you know, crowds of thousands of high school football players around our nation, and finding these guys that can not only, it really doesn't do them any good if they can only succeed on the football field. They have to be able to succeed in the classroom and in all the military. So there's a different function when you're recruiting those type of players.
So is there any desire to get back into coaching?
I don't know that there's anybody coming to me. I have my football camps, which kind of keeps that part of my life going. I have an offensive and defensive lineman camp. It's called Trench Camp, and we do one in Portland, and then we work with through Nike, and we do we go to some of their schools around the nation. So I get to keep my hand in it. I get to continue to be a part of it through Trench Camp.
These black and gold events that you put on, can you tell me a little bit more about those?
So through my time there at West Point, I got to be around these great kids. And now after their football seasons are over, their senior year, then they basically go to battle. And you watch them grow through that. And I've been able to stay fairly close with a lot of those guys. And I had my right tackle when I first got there. His name's Seth Neiman, and he went through the whole process and continued on. And from first lieutenant to lieutenant colonel all the way through, and he ends up being Green Beret, and then the special forces. Those guys do some crazy things, and they're asked to do some crazy things, but. He was severely injured in Afghanistan, and I went and saw him, and I realized at that point that I was going to do something for them. So I started a fishing rodeo down in Grand Isle, Louisiana. Like, it's called the Black and Gold Classic. It's funny if you think about, you know, Colorado's black and gold, West Point's black and gold, the New Orleans Saints are black and gold. So a lot of the teams that I played on were black and gold, so it worked for me. So I call it the Black and Gold Classic. And we have a fishing tournament, and we now, you know, my daughters are helping me run it, and they've grown it to where we now have a fishing tournament and a big dinner. We have, you know, Joey LaBella comes in and cooks for us, and a couple of the other top chefs of New Orleans or of Louisiana, they come down and they put on a big feed for us, and so we have a sponsor's dinner. We have a concert. We have three bands that play on Saturday night. So we've grown this thing up, and we also do a sporting clay shooting event. And so we've grown this thing up now. This is our 11th year down in Grand Isle. And so we're going to give money now to a group called the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. And that's basically the foundation that when any of our special operations, whether it's the Green Beret or the Navy SEALs or any special operators, if they're killed in action, this is a foundation that is run by General Huttmacher, and they raise money to support that special operator's family for the rest of their life. So they build money so that they can have a scholarship and get their education for the rest of their lives. So I think it's a great event, and Clay Huttmacher is the president, and I got to meet him and be around him, and I think he's doing a great job, and we're looking forward to having them on board, trying to raise some money for him.
You've certainly earned your share of honors throughout your career. What was it like for you getting the call that you had made it into the Saints Hall of Fame?
Oh, that was awesome. That was, you know, I forget what year it was, but it was, you know, that was great. I love being in there. I love coming back. I love seeing all the guys. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we were, they brought back whatever they called the, you know, the top 50. And so they brought 50 of us back, and we got to see a lot of, I crossed over a lot of those guys' career. And, you know, some of those guys, that was the last time I saw them. You know, John Hill passed away, you know, so that was the last time you get to see those guys. So that it's a great honor, but, you know, again, honors are, have never played a really big role in my life, but I'm so proud to be associated with that group of guys, and we have so much fun when we get back together.
There we have it, folks, 11 episodes in the books. Thank you, Stan Brock, for your time. I appreciate everybody sticking this one out. Hoot out to you. We'll see you on the next one.